So I've been asked to speak about greed and consequent effect of corruption. It would be a mistake, actually, to think that greed is the cause or the direct cause of corruption. Actually, greed is an effect itself of a more radical problem that is part of human nature. So I would like to talk about that. Because greed, which in Sanskrit is called lobha, is only the indirect effect for people to becoming corrupted, which means to accept something that they're not supposed to accept in exchange of something. So we'll talk about the secondary cause and effect a little later. But first I would like to go a little behind in time, just to try to understand how come a human being comes to a point of becoming so degraded that cannot order to his body what to do, or to his mind what to do, but becomes slave of something that he himself knows that is not good. It's not morally good, it's not ethically good, it's not spiritually good, it's just bad. And he knows that the possibility that corruption becomes a destroying factor in his life is so high, but he just doesn't care because it's part of his nature. It's like my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, was used to tell those type of anecdotes. Mm-hmm. My English is not perfect. I'm not from here. I'm trying to speak English at the best of my capacity. So this anecdote is like, there was one time one scorpion that wanted to cross a river. So scorpions do not know how to swim. So there was this river. And there was a crocodile there who knows how to swim. So the scorpion asked the crocodile, "Can I come on your back? And you please let me cross the river?" And the crocodile said, "Oh no, I'm not so foolish. Because if I let you come, come on my body, you will sting me and you will kill me." Mm-hmm. And the scorpion said, "Oh, I'm not so foolish myself. If I do that, then I will be killed also, because I don't know how to swim. I will drown." And the crocodile was convinced with this type of argument and led the scorpion to climb on his body, and then he began the crossing of the river. In the middle of the river, the scorpion stung. And then the crocodile said, "Oh, what did you do? Now I will die, but you will also die. Why did you do that?" And the scorpion said, "This is just my nature. There is nothing I can do. Even something is obviously detrimental. Even something is obviously something that will destroy your life. You will still do it just because it is your nature. You cannot not do it." So it is particularly interesting to understand how all of us living beings came to the point of being in such a way that we do even things that we know, we ourselves know, that would be detrimental for our lives. And there is one very interesting verse, which is half Sanskrit and half Bengali verse, which is Brahmanda Brahmita Kon Bhagyavan Jiv Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. For the time being, we are concerned only with three words of this verse, which is Brahmanda, Brahmite, and Jiv. What does it mean? It means that the Jiv Jiv comes from the Sanskrit root ji, which means to live. So jiva is the living entity. And why it is maybe the main word that we use to refer to ourselves, to the living being, is jiva, because it is the immediate, more apparent characteristic by which we recognize something that is living, by its life. Is something gross that is not something, but is someone or somebody. Because a thing, an object, cannot grow, cannot die. Only living entity. Only when a living entity comes inside a certain organized structure of material nature, then it begins to manifest life. So in Sanskrit literature, all of us are very often called as jiva, or living entity. So this living entity comes in the Brahmanda. Anda means egg, and Brahma means is the first living being in this universe, its name, the one who architectured, build up the universe. Not he created. He didn't create anything. So just like the sun, they're correct. Because he organized something, taking the necessary from someone else. So the material nature is not being created by Brahma. Brahma takes the material nature and molds it. And then he creates, this is a very complicated subject matter, of course we are not going to talk how the universe was created according to our tradition, to our school. So since the universe is at eggish form, it's like an egg, it's not round, it's a little bit like this. So it resembles an egg. So the universe is called Brahmanda, the universe. And Brahmite means wandering without a real, place to go. How you say that?
Purpose.
Without a purpose, just going around. Just like when you don't know what to do with your day, you don't know where to go, you don't have anybody to meet, you're just bored to death. You just go in the river walk, you just walk. You don't have any end, you don't have anything to do. So when you do that particular type of working, that is called Brahman. Brahma, it's not Brahma. Brahma and Brahma are two different words, although they are similar. So Brahmanda Brahmite, and Jiva after, means that the living entity just go around in this universe without a purpose, without a real reason to be here. And that the Jiva is not originally part of this universe is proved by its name in itself, which is jiva, which means the living entity. This material world has no life, it's just matter. What is the difference between me and this instrument? That I can decide to move, and the instrument cannot decide to move. It moves if I want it. I push it, and it moves. But it didn't decide to move. I can decide to move. This decisional power is one of the many characteristics of the living entity. But these characteristics are not part of the material nature. Any scientist, no scientist in the history of this world ever proved that life came from matter. No one. Only theories, ideas, but no proofs. So until any scientist can prove that life can come from something that is not alive, we had to conclude that there is a difference between something that is alive and something that is not alive. And we call it spiritual soul and material nature. Welcome. And material nature. They are two different things. Just like we are inside a house, we cannot say that ourselves and the house are the same thing. They are two different things. This is a box of, maybe in the US you don't use much bricks. Anyway, it's a box. And we are inside the box. So this body is a box for the soul. And the soul is inside. We are the soul. And the body is something that we have. To be and to have are two different verbs. The verb to be is indicated when you have identification. To have, when you want to define or you want to relate, as something that is your property. It's your property, two different things. You have a body, you and the body are two different things. And you are the spirit soul. Are means I and the spirit soul are the same thing. There's no difference. So the jiva comes not from the material world. Brahmanda, Brahmite, Kon, Bhagyavan, Jiv. Now they are the two words, Kon and Bhagyavan, has no interest in this context. So we erase them for one moment. So that's why this verse is saying that the jiva came in this material world and became loitering in this material world, going from body to body. Sometimes as a man, sometimes as a woman, sometimes as an American, sometimes as Indian, sometimes as European, sometimes as an animal, sometimes as a tree. And every time he says, oh, now I am a man. Oh, now I am Indian. Now I am a dog. Now I am a tree. And every time the soul, forgetful of what it actually is, identifies itself with something that is not. So the jiva comes from the spiritual world. And what is a jiva? A jiva is a person like us. Actually, we are the jiva. But since now we are a little different from the original jiva that we are, so let's make, just for the sake of discussion, a difference. So the jiva in the spiritual world is like us, a person. The jiva is a body. The jiva may be a man on this form, maybe a woman, maybe an animal, anything. Anything that you see in this world, it exists in the spiritual world. Why is that? Because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So you imagine yourself in the spiritual world, and you have what? You live, and you think, you feel, you do everything that you do here, you do it in the spiritual world also. Of course, there are a lot of differences, but just because I want to arrive to a point, let's just say that the spiritual world is similar to this material world. So because I want to arrive to greed, what is the most important characteristic of the soul? Every one of us is alive. So what is the thing that we like the most? For instance, I like to write. I've been writing since I was 7 years old, you know, which means I barely knew how to speak, but I knew how to write. I was the first in my classroom. So what do you like? What is the best thing that you like in your life?
Hearing.
Just something that you really like.
Hearing. And deity worship.
Chanting. Okay. What you like, ma'am? What you like? Something that you really love?
My children.
Huh?
My children.
Your children. That's very nice. I also love my children very much. And you?
I like to paint.
You like to paint. Yeah, my wife was also a painter. So, you see, every one of us as many things that you like, but there must be something that is more than the others. You like to paint, you love your children, you like to hear, I like to write. And if I ask every one of us has something. So what is the most important characteristic of the soul in the spiritual world? That is called in Sanskrit prema. And prema is love, is what you said. Love. You love. This is the characteristic. And as many characteristics, but love is the most important. Like to receive love and give love. And when the soul is able to love the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Krishna, and not only and be loved by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, but also not only him, but everybody else. It's not that in the world everybody is like that, you know, all day long, for the eternity, you know, just with your hands like this in front of God. It's not like this, the spiritual world. We love everybody. Just like here we have children and we have wives and we have husbands and friends and we have teachers and we have students. We have so many relationships. So the spiritual world is something similar. And we love everybody. We are loved by everybody. And there are wonderful descriptions of the spiritual world in our scriptures. You should read our books. They're particularly interesting. So this characteristic of love is how we are made. This is how, just like this house. This house is made in such a way that maybe one family, it's a very small house, maybe one family can live here. You know, there are two rooms, big kitchen, nice living room. This is how it was not conceived to be a temple. If it was conceived as a temple, it would have been completely different. So the living soul in the spiritual world is conceived in such a way that he likes to love and be loved. So now something happened during our life that we wanted to come down from the spiritual world to the material world. What happened is complicated, we are not going to discuss it, but happened, evidently, we are here. So something happened. We came in the material world, and we have not left our characteristics in the spiritual world. We came with all that we are. Just like when we take an airplane and we go on the other side of the planet, it's not that we become different. We're always the same person, but in another place. So the jiva in this material world is exactly the same. But the difference is that when the jiva comes in the material world, becomes covered, you know, becomes like a filter, goes all around the spiritual spark. And what happens with this filter? That all the characteristics of the soul comes out naturally, but they are modified in their quality. Let's do an example. I speak, and there are specific machines that they can distort? Is it correct in English? Distort the sound. So it comes out like, so you don't recognize it. The voice comes from me. It is what I am saying, but you have this machine in front of your mouth that distorts the very same quality of your voice, not the words. The words are the same. This machine does not put other words in your mouth or do not manifest other words. It's just the quality of what you say that is different. You see? So what is this filter? This filter is called ahammamehi, which is false identification. It is not our capacity. This is an external energy that comes originally from the Supreme Personality of God. So we come pure in this material world, but we are covered by a secondary energy which is called Maya, and one of the characteristics of this Maya is to confuse you of who you really are. And all the characteristics of the soul come out because it couldn't not come out. Because it's the soul acting. The soul acts, even in this material world. But everything it does comes out different. Comes out Lord Bush. Everything we do, the way we think, the soul thinks, but it becomes perverted. The soul speaks and the quality becomes perverted. In the spiritual world, we have so much taste and pleasure about talking about the Supreme Personality of God and what He does, and not only Him, also we were very happy talking about the transcendental activities of everyone living in the spiritual world. But in this world, this capacity becomes perverted. We lose the taste that we had in the spiritual world. Now we want to talk about sport. Now we want to talk about cars. Now we want to talk about money. We want to talk all these things that are not related to the inner quality of the soul. And why not? Because this quality has been lost. Has been lost in the moment that it came through this filter. It was lost. It did the same thing, but in a different quality. So what happened with this main and very important quality that we were mentioning before, which is called prema, which means spiritual love? That also follows the same path, that it comes out. The soul wants to love and be loved, but it comes out completely distorted. And because it forgets about its spiritual identity, then, since it still wants to love, starts to love the things that are compatible with its false identification, which is the body, which is the matter. Since the soul forgets to be a spiritual soul, and start to think, no, now I am a man, so I want to love. So what is that a man loves? Loves what? He loves women, loves his children, loves his friends, loves his country, loves the sports, loves culture, philosophy, the thought, religion, all these things. And all these things does not refer directly to the soul. It refers to the body. The gross body, which is this one that we can touch, or the subtle body, which we cannot touch, but we can perceive. Subtle body means the mind, which is formed by thought, feeling, willing, etc. And intelligence, which is discrimination. And then identification. And then consciousness, which are the four parts of the four parts of our subtle body. So naturally, since prema in the spiritual world is so powerful, which means it's the main thing that you want to do, then you cannot forget this very powerful necessity. Then in the material world, what it becomes? It becomes lust. Prema in the spiritual world, spiritual love, lust, kama, in the material world. Kama means I love material things. And you try to be happy with those, but you can't. Why? Because although you seem to be matter, you're not. So it's like to try to touch the shadow of an object. You like to touch, I don't know, a tree. You really want, you really like it. But then you think that the shadow of the tree is a tree because it's the same form. Yes, it's just form, but not substance, only form. Reflection of a tree in a very, how you say, even? Lake, very flat lake. It's exactly the same. But you try to touch The tree in the water, only form, no substance. When you try to enjoy things in this material world, it's only form, no substance. It looks like what you want, but it is not. Then, this lust, kama, how you try to satisfy, that is a byproduct of lust, is greed. That in Sanskrit is called lobha, or lobha. You need things to satisfy your desire to be happy, which is called lust. Lust means very degraded type of love. Then you try to make a lot of money, and you are never enough, because why you are never enough? You know who are the most frustrated people in this world? The richest. The richest. You study the studies about people who are drug addicts or people suicides, you know, the more the countries are rich in advance, the more. In India, no, that does not exist, as suicides. There are not. Very few. The poorer, the less people want to suicide. Why? Because the poor people, at least they have the illusion that they, now they are miserable, but they will become happy when they will have a lot of money. But those who have money have not even the illusion. They don't know what to do with their lives, because they have no illusion, they have no dreams. They have no dreams. So greed is the illusory instrument to satisfy kama, satisfy our lust, our material desires. And you would do anything to have objects, money, because this is your what. What would you do for your children? What would you do? Everything. Everything. What would you... I wrote 14 books in my life, plus many others. I would write at midnight because I'm too busy. Midnight. If you come down my house, 1 o'clock in the night, 90% the light is on. You can try. I challenge you. Because I'm just too busy. But then at the end of the day, if I don't write something, I'm just so frustrated that I'm unhappy. You see? So the person who is dissatisfied would do just anything to find the satisfaction. And this is a very important notion to understand, because the way that we can tread to find satisfaction is to understand that it is correct to desire. It is not that, like in India, there are many people who give up everything. They go on a mountain, on Himalaya, and they meditate, and they renounce everything, you know, because they want to curb desire. They're like the Buddhists, the mainstream of Buddhism. They want to nullify the personality. They want to become zero. Nirvana, nir. Nir means known. I mean, it's a negation. Nirvana means object. It's a non-compromising no. Anything you would say, just like there is a particular philosophy in India, which is a little different from Buddhism, which is called the neti-neti philosophy. Neti, in Sanskrit, is composed by na and iti. Iti means this, and na means no. So anything you say, then you say no. Is this true? No. Is that true? No. Is this false? No. Is this false or true? No, it's false. It's not. It just does not exist. This is the nihilist philosophers who say that nothing exists. That it is all illusion. Buddhism and other certain type of Indian philosophers, they are uncompromising nihilists. So we don't agree with them. We say that the personality is eternal, and that we cannot destroy desire, or we cannot curb desire. You just have to learn how to desire the right thing. Since we are spirit soul, we can only be satisfied if we desire spiritual things, because they are compatible. Try to mix together water and oil. Just shake them very strongly. Have you ever tried? When I was a kid, you know, they were. This is part of my chemistry. You shake them, shake, 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 and you see that for some seconds, water and oil, they are together, and then you see that they separate. Why? Because they are incompatible in their own chemical structure. They cannot stay together. They cannot mix. So spirit and matter are so incompatible that they cannot mix. They seem to mix, but the result is an incompatible interior experience, which is opposite to the experience we have in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, we are happy. In the material world, we are miserable. Why? Because incompatibility between ourselves and what we think to be the material world. So until we don't learn the ABC or the philosophy, which is the difference between ourselves and the world where we live, then it's not really possible to build up a life which is worth to be living, happy life. And it's not possible. So I just wanted to say something about this topic of greed, to resume in few words. Greed is a characteristic of the soul. In origin, it is pure. In this material world, becomes contaminated. And because it is contaminated, it simply does not work to give us what we want. And because we are living in a natural life, then we build up a disastrous societies, which are built. I mean, I don't want to go back to my young age. When I was a kid, I was very much into politics. Welcome. So much into politics, I don't want to begin again my revolutionary ideas. But it's just, there's such a stupid way to build up societies. How is it possible that who had the idea of money? Who had this idea of commerce? Who had the idea that something free, like an apple, that it grows free from the earth, which is God-given, and from a tree, which is free of charge? A tree just grows from the rain, that it comes free from the sky. And to have an apple, we have to work for 1 hour of our life. Why don't we just take an apple and we eat it? Why don't we just take whatever the land give us and just eat and be peaceful and go to the temple, chant Hare Krishna, dance? Why we should work to make money so that we can pay 10 times, 20 times the real value of what we eat and what is necessary for our life? It's really not not an intelligent way of building up societies. And a society built like this must necessarily have crisis. Necessarily. And this is not possible because it's just the underlying political and economical concept that brings to that. It's just unavoidable. The way these societies are built up are destined to go to wars, are destined to have natural disasters. Natural disasters do not come by chance. There is no such a thing as chance. It's an even a physical concept that everything that comes is an effect. There is cause and effect. This is also in our philosophy is called karma. You know, if you do something, you know that you must have a result. And if you get a result and you don't know what did you do to have the result, you must be sure that you must have done it. Because it's impossible that you get something if you have not done. Otherwise, the whole concept of God will come under discussion. How is it possible that God is so wicked that, you know, that people die without reason for earthquakes? What children did to die in so many miserable ways, like earthquakes or tsunamis or these things? God is not wicked, and God has nothing to do actually with what happens to us. What happens to us is just a mathematical result of an operation that we enacted. It's automatic. It's not that God says, okay, you know, now the Japanese, they attacked U.S. in 1942, I remember the date, and killed 5,000 Americans now. It's not like this. God does not take care of these things. It's mechanical. It's something totally natural. So we have to learn how to act if we want to have a nice life, so that the results that we get, we must know that the results that we get are similar in quality to what we did. We must know what is good and what is bad, and not just for some ideology because we want to be good. It's our first interest to do the right thing so we don't get terrible results. For instance, how many people know, maybe you don't know that eating meat is bad. Maybe you don't know, you think, what's wrong with eating meat? You are killing. You are killing, and you don't even know it, that you are killing. When you eat an hamburger, you participate to slaughtering animals, and you eat them. And then one day something happened to you. Oh, why is that? Oh, this is God. Just like if you kill somebody, the police come, you know, and you go in front of the judge, and the judge send you in prison, and said, oh, what did they do? You know, don't you know that killing is wrong? Well, if you don't know, better you get educated. If we don't want to suffer, we should not make people suffering. And animals are living just like us. So this is part, and I conclude here, part of a very large philosophy that we are presenting. Our temples are like schools where you can come and make questions and study philosophy so you can apply it in your life. And you can practice it, so you are now welcome to make questions. This is very important to make questions. Don't think that you don't have questions. Even if you know the answer, or you think that you know the answer, just put the questions, because you never know the answer that you are going to get. Maybe some perspective that you never thought before. So I will be here for answering your question. But since we are going to publish it on the internet, thousands of people listen to our classes. So you please raise your hand for any question. Somebody, maybe Bhattamai Prabhu, can give you the recording. You have a question. I heard you.
How did you know?
I was listening to you. Try to hide yourself. But I heard you.
Okay, well, you know, you're talking about, use the analogy of, you know, like a tree and water or a shadow, you know, that these things have form but no substance. And you're referring to, you know, material world, but, you know, I mean, we can see, you know, we touch, you know, something, we taste something, we hear something, we, you know, it does have substance. So can you clarify that?
The substance I was referring to was a substance of the object reflected, not the absolute absence of a substance. In other words, better we wait a second. In other words, if you have a tree, and on this tree there are fruits, you want to taste the fruits. And so the substance is the fruit. So this tree is near a bank of a lake, and you see the fruits in the lake. Okay, so if you touch those fruits, you touch something. It's not absolutely absence of substance, but not the substance of the object reflected. In other words, while you can eat the fruit that comes from the tree, you cannot eat the fruit reflected in the water. You take the water, but not the fruit. Actually, I was referring to the question of the guru that you were discussing before. It has that's clarified, or yeah. So why do we need the guru? You were discussing that in the car. I heard you.
Oh, okay.
You forgot. I didn't.
Yeah, that was yeah. No, Veda and I talked about it when we got back.
Yeah. Okay, any other question?
You were mentioning about the greed, but the greed is also spiritual. It means you can always connect it to Krishna for his service and for devotional, so many things to get more service. So, just wanted to clarify. It's not completely material, maybe it's less spiritual manners.
Greed cannot be totally material, because matter has no greed. Matter is inert. It's just an object. Cannot desire wrong or right things. What it desires, the wrong way, or the right way, the right object, or the wrong object, is always the soul. But, as I explained at the beginning, when the soul comes in the material world, it gets covered by this filter, and all its qualities become distorted. So greed is a natural product of kama, which is lust. And what is lust? Lust is love in the spiritual world distorted by the material filter. So the soul loves, wants happiness, comes in this material world, forgets to be spiritual, then it begins to love the material things, and this is kama. It's the same spiritual characteristic, but perverted by Maya. And to have what you want, you must accumulate things, money and friends and lovers and house and a lot of things. And that is called greed, loba in Sanskrit. And to get those greed, the result of your greed, sometimes you get it by the illicit ways, sometimes illicitly. And there's corruption. So you have a big, you are a big man, and somebody comes to you, he wants to work, and you say, okay, I will let you work, but you have to give me something. Give me money, give me whatever. You're not entitled to that, but because you are in a power position, then let yourself to be corrupted to have more. And this is natural, this is part of human nature. Unless the people is not educated in the spiritual philosophy, you cannot help it. Because you need it, you just need happiness. You would do anything to have that. That's why the more materialistic you are, the less happy you are. The richer you are, the more miserable you are. The more spiritual you are, the more peaceful you are. Why? Because while the materialistic people need things that he can find only on the external of himself, outside. So outside, you know, you want to get it, but other people want to get it also. So it's not easy always to get to what you want. But the spiritual people finds everything within himself, and you know, it's always there. Nobody touches it because it's yours. It's only yours. You find everything within yourself. When you chant Hare Krishna, nobody will steal away your Krishna. Nobody will steal away Radharani. Nobody will steal away your meditation, your internal quality. Nobody. It's the only thing in life that nobody can touch. Nobody can steal it away from you. It's yours. While money, you may lose it. Family, you will lose it. Because time goes, and one day, I'm not talking specific, all of us, my wife, one day will go. Maybe I will go before her, you know. But as a matter of principle, everything I'm attached to in this material world will go. It is as you say, as sure as death. It's the surest thing in the world. So why to get attached to something that it will surely go? It is not intelligent. So better to find those things that will not go away. And this is only spiritual things, only spiritual world. That is eternal, so it will never go away. Better to be in touch with the spiritual how do you say that in English?
Spiritual
world that with material environment. Yes, environment. Yeah. Environment. Any other question?
Can you please give the idea machine?
Yet, in this world, we have to have a certain amount of things to survive. We have to have a house, we have to have cars, we have to have things. And the thing is how do you go about having those things without having the attachment to those things? So you can have your spiritual life and have your secular life too.
So, very, very nice question. You find the answer to your very nice question in the second part of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and the whole of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna, Sri Krishna, in his speech, for those who do not know what is a Bhagavad Gita, is a philosophical treatise, where Krishna teaches the basic philosophy to his friend and disciple Arjuna. And he teaches something very, very particular that I personally, before, well, I became devotee when I was 18, so I was very young. But anyway, before becoming a devotee, I was studying other philosophers, many other philosophers. So I never found this concept. I always found the concept, either either materialistic philosophy, which is matter is everything, and spiritual does not exist, or you are a spiritual, then you have to give away everything.
Yeah.
Like St. Francis, I was born in Rome, so my upbringing was Christian, Catholic Christian. And so then Krishna comes and teach me that actually you cannot give away something that it doesn't belong to you. When you say, I give everything up, we forget that everything is God's. Yeah. Everything belongs to Him. So the real renunciation is not give up the things, but utilize them in the way He wants us to utilize them.
Yeah.
If I come to your house, I'm sure I can sit down.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that I sit down where you want. It's not that I cannot sit down, but maybe you don't want me to sit down in your table. Maybe you want me to sit down in your coach. Okay? So Krishna knows that by sending us here, we have to utilize home. We need to have a car. We need to have clothes. We need to live decently. We cannot live like bums in the street. He knows that.
Yeah.
But he told us how to live in such a way that we don't do things wrong, harmful to us and to others.
Yeah.
So you utilize your home, but do a little altar, maybe, you know. You can chant Hare Krishna. And when maybe you shouldn't eat meat, you should be vegetarian, you should offer your... In other words, you spiritualize your material things. Because matter comes from Krishna. Everything comes from God. Even this material world comes from God. So does not exist only spirit and matter. No. Exists spirit, matter, and matter spiritualized by devotional or spiritual use. And this is what we had to do until we are in this material world. We had to utilize matter and spiritualize it by the right use of this object. If we learn this science, which is called Karma Yoga, it's a science. It's very, very subtle. So that's why you need guidance. You cannot learn it only by the book. You need somebody in person who teaches you. That is called the guru, the spiritual master. Then if you learn this science, then doesn't matter if you are in the spiritual world or in the material world, because you will always be in a transcendental consciousness. And in that stage, material nature will not disturb your spiritual life anymore. You will be like a lotus. You know, like when we talk about lotus feet, lotus face. Why lotus? Because lotus is impervious. You know, if you sprinkle water on a lotus, you'll see that does not, how you say, does not absorb it. It slides away like this. So a transcendentalist is like a lotus. He lives in this material world, but is totally impervious to anything material. He can stay in this material world for lives.
and he will never become contaminated, because he knows perfectly how to spiritualize matter. He knows that everything belongs to God. And with the consciousness, he will be in the spiritual world. It actually, he is the one who can transform this material world in a spiritual world. Wherever a saint is, that is not material world, that is a spiritual world.
Building on what Wendy just said, it's very similar to what Wendy was saying, is the way I know I feel, and I know a lot of other people I know feel this way, is that we may feel that we are doing things correctly and we are living correctly, but just by the material world in which we live, we are contributing to corruption to some way. So what can you say about that? So again, in terms of maybe I don't do anything that's corrupt, but it ultimately contributes to the cycle in which our society is living.
There are obligated mechanisms in this material world that each one of us will be consciously or unconsciously participant, willingly or unwillingly participant, because it's a mechanism. You cannot avoid it. When you are in this material world, you had to do it. And you will see one day, as a young boy, young man, a young woman, we were very idealistic. And we would never, I remember, I would never do anything like that, because I would be ready to go live in the street, but not to this. How many things, how many times we were corrupted? We accepted to be corrupted. And in our mind, what can you do? You know, I had to live. What can I do? This is how life goes. The only way we can not become corrupted is to change the quality of our greed, which means that we change the quality of our lust, which means the quality of desire. And we can do that only if we learn the second part of the verse that I mentioned in the beginning of this lecture, which is Brahmanda Brahmite Bhagyavan Jiv Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So this is a way we can conclude this lecture, maybe, because it's getting late, to by understanding how it happens that someone decides to finish, to conclude this vicious cycle of desires and frustrations. By becoming Bhagyavan, which means very lucky, how one becomes lucky? When one inside starts to say in a very decisive, in a very strong way, that's it. I'm not going to continue living like if the God does not exist. I'm not going to continue my materialistic life. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to study Krishna consciousness. I'm going to go to the temple. I'm going to practice Krishna consciousness to start my spiritual life. And how to do that? First, you have to associate with the devotees. Then you come to the temple and associate. Then you listen to them. And then you choose the guru, the spiritual master, Guru Krishna Prasad. Why you need a guru? You need a guru because you need blessings. Krishna is not someone that you can force to accept you. It's not like you go banging to Krishna's door and say, look, I did thousands of years of austerities, I gave you so much money, I went to the temple, I gave you $1,000, now you have to accept me back, or I know so much philosophy, I'm so learned. Krishna is not impressed by that. Krishna is impressed by how? You know, the mother, she knows. Because she knows that there is only, if her children go there and they give her, okay, you gave me for so many years food and house, now I will repay you everything. Take $1 million. You just take it away, throw it away. What do you want? You just want a kiss. That's all. That's love. That's love. Krishna wants love. Guru Krishna Prasad. And the Prasad, the mercy, it comes when you do seva, when you do service. You serve a guru personally, physically. You serve the devotees. Then they think, oh, so much, so nice service, so much they are doing for me. I bless you. And this is what Krishna wants. This is how you go back to Krishna. You cannot say that, I have Taupa books, I read, so why I need a guru? You know, it doesn't work like this, because knowledge, first of all, the knowledge will not come at all. You will not understand without someone explaining to you, but also without seva, without service, kripa or mercy or blessings do not come. Then you don't understand. Your understanding is just superficial. It's not deep. Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Bij means the seed, very small. And the Guru and Krishna, through their mercy, they put the seed of devotional service or transcendental love in your heart. And this seed becomes a lata. Lata means a creeper. Of what? Of bhakti, of devotional service. You do service to Guru, Krishna, Sadhu, the devotees, then they bless you, and then through this blessing that seed comes, and this seed becomes a creeper, then becomes a tree of what? Of transcendental love, of bhakti, of prema. Then bhakti becomes prema. Why? Because without bhakti there cannot be prema. What is bhakti? Bhakti is service. And what is prema? Prema is love. How do you show love? You love your children, you love your husband. What do you do? You cook for him. You iron, whatever. You do something to make him happy. What is this? This is service. You see? When you love somebody, you serve him. And you are served back. This is the exchange of love. It goes through service. So it's through bhakti that you develop or show prema, love. Prema and bhakti are two things that are completely interlinked one with the other. Cannot be separated. It's one thing. One is the object and the other one is the manifestation. Cannot be separated. Just like there is the fire and there is a heat. You cannot say, I want a fire, but I don't want the heat. It's not possible. So if there is prema, love for God, then there must be bhakti also at the same time. If you want devotional, if you want spiritual life, you have to study and you have to serve. If you come here, you study, but you don't do service, you will not understand. You will not understand philosophy. Because the whole point of study arrives into dasa. Well, that's our name. You know our name. Our name, all of us, has a different name, initiated devotees. But the second name, the surname, is always the same. Because we have, the father is one, so the surname is the same. It's Dasa. Dhananjaya Dasa. Manonath Dasa. Advaita Shaiva Dasa. One day you will also have your name. Like this. Dasa, Dasa. Dasa means servant. Servant is a very particular way of saying lover. You know, in the material world, servant it gives the wrong idea of what actually is bhakti, or what is dasa, what is a serving. When you serve your lover, that is not like a servitude. It's a manifestation of love. It's very elevated. It's very noble. So dasa means actually lover, and you show your love through service. So this is what I had to say. I think we had to suspend here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.